This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to learn more about an innovative new plan at Florida Gulf Coast University that's meant to instill the entrepreneurial spirit into the incoming freshmen with a direct, hands-on approach. The Entrepreneurship Living Learning Community will house 42 students for 4 years with an on-site business incubator and opportunities for startup funding. We'll hear about that in a bit. But first, as the population of the United States grows older, the need for more and better care for our aging residents becomes more important. And practically nowhere is that more true than in states like Florida, even more so here in South and Southwest Florida. We're joined today by two doctors who work directly with the elderly to discuss the many issues facing patients, doctors, and the institutions that care for them. First, Dr. Ron Gary is a board-certified gerontologist. He serves as a medical director for two assisted living facilities and a home care company here in Southwest Florida, and is the subsection chief of geriatrics at Naples Community Hospital. In 2003, he was appointed by Florida Governor Jeb Bush as an expert to the Agency of Healthcare Administration. Dr. Gary, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm also joined by Dr. Jacqueline Pfaffer. She's the president and CEO of the Naples Senior Center and Jewish Family and Community Services of Southwest Florida. She has published numerous articles in professional journals on social work practice and administration and human resource development. And she's also the immediate past chair of the Collier County Leadership Coalition on Aging. Dr. Pfaffer, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure.
And as always, we welcome your calls and comments with comments and questions. Maybe you're caring for an aging parent or a relative. Maybe you have a question. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCO. So, Dr. Jacqueline Pfaffer, let me start with you. Can you tell me a little bit about the Naples Senior Center? What kind of services are provided there for seniors?
We offer a variety of services, primarily helping seniors combat isolation and loneliness. And as research has shown us, isolation and loneliness, more than an emotional issue, it can lead to physical issues as well. We also have a vibrant and rapidly growing dementia respite program. Just to tell you how rapidly it's increasing, 3 years ago we had one group for 12 people. Today we have 8 groups for 12 people each.
What is dementia respite?
It provides 4 hours of structured stimulation and care for the person with Alzheimer's or dementia, and it gives their caregivers 4 hours of respite to go shopping, to meet friends, or even go home and take a nap.
Yeah, it's a full-time job, 24/7, when you're taking care of someone.
Yes, it is.
So it keeps the people occupied and
Not only occupied, it keeps them stimulated. There's brain fitness, art therapy, music therapy. We have gentle physical therapy, and we also have meditation. We have games where they can stimulate their memories. So it's more than, as one of our caregivers said, it's more than just babysitting.
It's kind of like, mental exercises.
Mental exercises.
Like going to the gym for your brain, sort of.
Absolutely. And it helps the person with the disease feel connected to others.
Is this something that's kind of new?
I don't think it's really new. I think the way we do it, I've been told the way we do it in Southwest Florida is rather unique. We have a licensed clinical mental health practitioner facilitating the group, supported by 3 or 4 volunteers. And there's no downtime in the 4-hour group, which starts at 10:30, ends at 2:30. And of course, there's a lunch where the patients eat in a family environment. It feels in a way just like home used to feel.
So how long have you been CEO there?
7 years.
7 years. Did this idea come about under your tenure?
Yes, it did. Shockingly, we opened the first senior center in Collier County, and that was exactly 4 years ago. And I moved here from the East Coast prior to that, as you can probably tell, from New York. And I was in my office and received a phone call from someone saying, I'm moving my mom down and I can't find a senior center in Collier County. I thought to myself rather smugly, well, he doesn't know how to use the internet. So, of course, I went to Dr. Google and I searched for a senior center in Collier County, and I could not believe there was no senior center. So we did a study. And we opened our doors in January 2014 to 80 initial members, and we now have over 1,300.
It sounds, though, that that kind of growth wouldn't be something that surprised you since you did your study. You know that there aren't that many resources, or there weren't that many resources at the time.
Unfortunately, there still are not that many resources. What surprised me was the depth of the challenges. What surprised me further was that it did not matter what socioeconomic background the person may have come from. You can be wealthy and lonely. You can be wealthy and have dementia. You can have all the resources in the world, but you still may need services.
That loneliness is a key issue.
It's a very key issue. And many of the folks down here came down here for a better life. If they have families, they're up north. But we find 70% of our senior center members live alone.
Yeah, well, and that I think that would be a unique challenge down here, too, because you have people that came down as snowbirds, decided to come down full time, and their family is all still up north.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we have people who've aged in place in their same homes in our neighborhood, which is Castello Drive area in Naples. They've aged in place. They've lost a spouse. They've outlived their income, and they're not living in the paradise they thought they'd be living in.
Exactly. Well, I want to turn now to Dr. Ron Gary. Your title is board-certified gerontologist, but your biography indicates a broader scope, including lots of research, professional positions and memberships and medical societies. Tell me a little bit about yourself and your path since finishing medical school.
It's interesting. When I was in medical school, my mentor there turned out to be a geriatrician, and I had no idea what geriatrics was at that time. And I thought, you know, there's doctors who take care of older people, not knowing that the actual medicine and science is so drastically different. And then so when I finished my medical school, the dean of the medical school said, doctors are made in Boston. So I went to Boston and did all my internal medicine and a geriatric fellowship at Harvard. And I quickly realized that it's just so different being a geriatrician than an internist or a family practitioner. We think differently. We act differently. And when I came down here, I saw a big need for in the geriatric community. The whole state of Florida has less than 50 geriatricians.
And so you said that there's a difference in the way that you approach things. How would a geriatrician, gerontologist, how would a person that's a gerontologist, how would they approach a medical situation differently from a regular internist or a general practitioner?
So we tend to be like the common sense type of doctors. We need to know that they have stairs in the house. We need to know where the family is. Is the family here? Is the family up north? You know, what kind of resources they have, what kind of financial resources, because we need all that to kind of help them. And so we think about things. And, you know, I had a patient that I took care of for years. And he developed Alzheimer's disease, and he had a melanoma on his head. And he kept on picking, and it would bleed, and it was in a horrible situation. And I remembered every time he came into my office, he wore a hat. And so I just wrote an order, you know, for the nursing staff, put a hat on in the morning. And he stopped picking his melanoma, and it was kind of knowing who he was as a person before the illness, you know, took that away.
It's almost kind of like being more of a concierge doctor, though. Almost. I mean, you really have to know – you have to spend a lot more time with people to know these kind of things.
Yeah, and you have to plan ahead. You know, down here, when I first came here, most homes were one story. And now a lot of homes are two stories. And you start have to asking, like we used to do up north, are there stairs? Because if there are stairs, you know, that may change where they need to live in the future. And so it's all about planning for the future and the aging process, you know, to allow them to – you know, have a healthy, fulfilled life. You know, my patients joke that my job is to keep them out of a nursing home. And obviously, nursing homes aren't the end all, and they're necessary, but most people enjoy their independence.
It seems like that's the aging struggle. You know, when you're young, you're just wanting to get away with something and get out of the house from your parents. But when you get older, you just want to stay in that house, you know?
Yeah, well, there's a comfort level.
Yeah.
You take an older person who has some cognitive issues and you put them in a hospital. And, you know, in no time, 50 to 60% of them can be confused. And then it becomes very difficult to take care of them. And then the hospital wants to medicate them. Then they get more confused. Then they fall. And so part of the thing is, you know, you tell the family members you can stay in the hospital with them. And just having a familiar face makes all the difference in the world.
And I think that the level of activity of family members is pretty critical. But then that's difficult also when, as we mentioned earlier, we have the transplants from other parts of the country here.
Yeah, it's always a struggle because I always say, you know, if you plan now, you'll be able to make your own decisions. If you wait till you get in trouble, your daughter's going to fly in from California and she's going to make all the decisions for you. And so you try to empower them to think ahead. And if somebody has limited resources, something like an assisted living may be the best option. Everybody says they want to stay at home, but I don't think they realize how expensive home care is.
So how are you associated with the Naples Senior Center?
So just in town, Dr. Pfeiffer and myself, we give a lot of talks together and radio interviews like this. And, in geriatrics in Naples and even in the state, it's such a small group that we all kind of have to work together.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's a pleasure to do so. So I wanted to ask a little bit about the changing expectations that seniors have, because I've read a lot of articles about baby boomers these days, and they seem to not – they don't want to be the knitting grandma sitting in a recliner and a rocking chair. They want to have a very active lifestyle. Does that present challenges, or does it make it a little bit easier to have people more engaged in their self-care?
I can talk about it from our senior center programming. For example, we do not have bingo. And while our senior center, it's for people 60 and over, the majority of the people are in their mid-70s to mid-80s. We have some people over age 100. But the most popular activities in our program are the physical fitness program, Tai Chi, physical activities, and then the creative arts. So – and I'll tell you that 90% of the folks who come drive themselves to the center. We have transportation available, but they choose to drive. Being independent, making their own decisions, not getting into a situation where if they have adult children, they have to call them for advice, that's key.
Yeah, and keeping that mental independence. But I think that physical independence kind of goes hand in hand.
Yes.
Do you see, Doctor, an increased risk of injury from additional physical activity as people age? Do some people just not accept that they can't go out and, play one-on-one basketball?
You definitely see that. And I joke with my patients. I always say, I wish I could ban tennis because everybody plays on clay courts and when they fall. But I always say you have to have the mentality. If you're 80 years old, you can't play like you're 50 years old and think you could get the ball. You have to put a little bit of barriers on it. But one of the drastic things I noticed when I moved down here is the patients are so healthy. And it's because we have an active lifestyle. We're not cooped up inside like they are in Boston for 4 or 5 months. And they're active all year. And in the end result, our 80 and 90-year-olds are so much healthier than my 80, 90-year-olds up in Boston.
Mm-hmm. We're discussing the growing needs of senior citizens in Southwest Florida. We'd like to hear from you, too. So give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So, Dr. Jacqueline Pfeiffer, let's talk first about the ways that home health care has changed, or in some cases even is becoming more possible. What options do aging people have for staying at home with some help care, some help or care, instead of having to go live in assisted living facilities? What kind of things are available out there?
Everyone does prefer to stay in their own home, and finances, resources are an issue. If someone can afford to maintain themselves at home with home health care, it's always the option of choice. Safety is always the option of choice. Now, there's technology. There's the medical alert system, which has done wonders. There's telemedicine that has done wonders. Professionals now are making home visits, whether it's a team of a nurse or a social worker. So I think we have talked for many years about aging safely and independently in the community. Now I think we're putting some technology behind it. Unfortunately, sometimes, particularly with the people we see with dementia, when they progress to the point that they can no longer be in our respite program, very often they've reached a point where their loved ones have to place them in a facility, not only for their own safety, but for the safety of those around them. So it's still very much a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything going on in the way of assisted living where they're making them attractive enough where people want to transition into something that could eventually be an assisted living facility? Because that adds in that social aspect that helps keep people active.
Yes. Some of them are so attractive that when you tour them, you want to live there. But it's difficult enough to get an elderly person to move. But to get them to give up their own environment and move somewhere where on some level they'll be aware that they're getting care, it's still a challenge.
Really? It's still difficult?
It's still a challenge.
Because I've seen some of these places.
Some of them
they
are
look
gorgeous.
Like resorts.
Well, and some – the continuing care communities where you can move in for independent living and then transition to assisted living and then eventually, if the case be, transition to full care. Those are the ones that I think are the most attractive. They're also the most costly. But I've gone to a few of them and said I'm ready to pack my bags.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the ads. I'm not old enough yet. But
there's an initial hurdle. And once they're over it, my patients will fight me. And then when they move in, they usually say, I should have done this sooner.
You know, I've heard that from people that I've had on our show, people that have gone into these facilities. They resist it all the way. But once they get there, they're happy and they've made a ton of friends.
Yes. They're not isolated anymore.
Oh, and that isolation is something that ends up leading to things like self-neglect, not taking care of oneself. And that's a big problem with older people.
Yes. And, you know, I call it the contract of silence. Their adult kids call them and say, how are you doing, Mom? Oh, I'm doing fine. Are you eating enough? Are you taking your medicine? Yes, I am. And then the daughter comes down with the kids at Christmas or Easter and opens the door and finds her mother disheveled, finds old food in the refrigerator and bottles of prescriptions not opened. And that's when it becomes a crisis.
Yeah. And then when you live far away, I have a grandmother, I call her, and she always shifts the focus of the conversation instead of I'm asking how she's doing. Oh, my legs aren't so good. But how are you doing? How's your daughter? How's your husband? How's everything there?
It's human nature.
They just turn it around on you to ask about how you're doing instead of focusing on how they're doing.
Right.
So, Dr. Rongary, what are your thoughts on the current state of assisted living facilities and institutions like that? I mean, how do you think – are they coming along? Are they better? Because before, they kind of had a not-so-great image.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, in general, stereotypes with aging and aging, all aspects of it. And assisted living, nursing home cares fall into that. We're lucky in, you know, Southwest Florida where we have so many more assisted livings and resources in that ballpark than we did in Massachusetts, where they may be far, far away. And with the weather down here, you know, they tend to have a lot more activities. Probably about 6 years ago, we did a Tai Chi study at Terracina Grande, you know, which is in Naples, and we were able to reduce falls by 60%. And, you know, if you have one exercise, you know, for an older person, I would say it's Tai Chi.
So you did a Tai Chi study, and it proved that people that participated in Tai Chi had a 60% lesser chance of falling?
Yeah, and then a 50% chance if they fell in injury. And, you know, there's been studies out of Boston and Peter Wayne's group that improved cognition. It's fascinating. And you think, what do we do in America that we've been doing for 2,000 years? And you can't think of anything. And to think about something passed on, and the biggest resistance I get from my patients is I have to tell them it's not a religion. You know, it's an exercise. And once yeah. they understand that, it works great. It's probably the one intervention in older people to prevent falls.
Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about these assisted living facilities and things like that, what resources are there to help with that, to get yourself into a better assisted living facility? You know, is there anything out there that can help people with that when they may not have the means to get into the resort type ones?
You know, so there are some subsidized housing in Naples, Goodwood Arms and things like that. But it's really, you know, insurance doesn't pay for it. So Medicare really was designed for an acute care program, doesn't really offer much for long-term care. You know, so short-term after a hip fracture, it covers for 100 days. Beyond that, none of that is really covered.
So when you're talking about planning ahead, is that part of maybe what you would suggest people plan, is planning for spending money on some that type of a living situation?
Yeah. So I had this conversation with a patient yesterday, and, you know, her house in Naples is probably $500,000-$600,000. And I basically said, if you sold that house, you'd be able to stay in an assisted living the rest of your life. And so sometimes you have to have the conversations. And, you know, my grandmother used to tell me, you never ask anybody about money. But unfortunately, in my job, I have to, because if they say they want to live at home and they don't have a lot of money, it's not possible.
I'm saying that to my grandma, too. If she would sell, she's on the peninsula in San Francisco. That she bought that a long time ago, too. You talk about return
right.
on investment
and,
there.
And so that's her long-term care policy, in essence.
Really? But she still won't. She won't get out. It's hard to convince people to do that. What do you suggest for family members who are having a hard time with somebody that they know really needs to get into an assisted living facility? Do family members have any ability to have any pull, or how can they push the issue when they're seeing that their loved ones aren't doing it on their own?
So it's hard. So I usually do what's called a stepwise approach. I say, you know, whenever you come down, take mom, take dad to go visit some of these places. See, you know, that takes away of the original thing of when you're thinking about a nursing home from the 60s. And they'll see they're not that bad. But unfortunately, when people are of sound mind, they get to make their own decisions. And on Saturday, I sent somebody home from one of the nursing homes who was adamant about going back. And yesterday I got to admit him to the hospital because they found him, you know, neglecting himself, not eating, hadn't eaten in 24 hours. And he's of sound mind, so you can't force him. But now this time you use that as evidence and say, look, you really do need to move into an assisted living.
Yeah, but then you're kind of forcing someone then to sell their real estate and put that money towards that. It's a really tough pickle. Dr. Pfaffer, what do you see as far as family involvement in these kinds of situations?
We see families who are in denial and don't want to accept the fact that mom or dad needs help. We see the seniors, some of them in their 90s, who are afraid to tap into certain resources that they're saving for a rainy day and it's pouring.
Yeah.
But sadly, parents have a responsibility of taking care of their children. Children don't have the responsibility of the legal responsibility to care for a parent. And as Dr. Gary said, you can't force anyone to do anything as long as they're mentally competent. Even if this person goes home and gets right back into the emergency room for self-neglect, as long as cognitively he's competent, there's nothing you can do.
All right. Well, we have a call coming in from Naomi in Cape Coral. Naomi, what would you like to say?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the radio.
Okay. What I wanted to let you know is I'm a social worker, and I get people a Medicaid waiver called in-home long-term care, which is paid for by the state. You have to qualify for it by having, you know, enough health problems to warrant having somebody to take care of you in your home, or to pay for assisted living, or to help pay for assisted living if that's what's called for.
Now, what's that called again?
So there is a program.
Medicaid waiver.
Yeah, it's a Medicaid waiver. You can apply for it by calling your area agency on aging.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful program. I probably get 3 or 4 people on it every month.
Do you have a lot of resources in Cape Coral for seniors?
No, there aren't a lot, but there are enough.
Okay.
You know, if you, first of all, if somebody can stay in their home, you can get this program and have a home and have a car. So Medicaid doesn't require you to lose any of those things. So if you can get care in your home and have somebody come in maybe 20 hours a week to help you bathe and to make sure that you have good food and make sure your house is clean and whatever medical needs you might have, then that's what we try to do. We want people to be in their homes as long as possible and bring services in, which is a whole lot cheaper than going to a facility.
Okay, thank you so much for your comments.
They actually pay for it.
Okay, yeah, thanks, and we'll talk about that. Thank you for your comments. So home health care, what are the costs of home health care these days? I mean, I guess it depends on how much care you need.
We're aware of the Medicaid waiver program, and I know in Collier County, very often there's a waiting list to access the program.
Oh, there is?
And Dr. Gary mentioned that we do have subsidized housing for seniors, Goodlett Arms. It's the only subsidized housing in Collier County, and it's a 3-year waiting list. So challenges.
It's pretty limited in Collier,
yeah,
is what we're talking about.
Challenges for resources are kind of limited.
If you need a little bit of a care, there's a little bit of resources. But if you have somebody who has Alzheimer's and they need 24-hour care 7 days a week, you know, there's no holidays, no vacations, you know, it gets expensive. And, you know, it's anywhere between $300,000 and $450,000 a year, you know, to cover that.
And that in-home health care?
In-home
yeah.
Healthcare.
Okay. But the subsidy that she's talking about is the
– it's called Medicaid waiver.
And that's – something
it's,
that people apply for.
It's through the government, and you can apply through Area Agency on Aging. We are a partner agency of the AAA. But it depends on the area where you are as to the availability of the service.
And how many resources in the given area. And I wanted to ask a quick question because you would be the person to ask. Can you explain to me once and for all the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia?
So dementia is the big catch-all term. So saying you have dementia is like saying you drive a car. And saying you have Alzheimer's, saying, you know, is like you have a blue Toyota RAV4. And so dementia just means in Latin, out of mind. And it's made up of probably about 100 different illnesses that affect your memory. And Alzheimer's is the most common cause of dementia.
Mm-hmm. Are we hearing more about it these days? Is it more common, or are we just hearing about it more?
I think it's both. Years and years ago, we thought that an older person became senile. And that could be just part of aging.
They used to call it hardening of the arteries.
Hardening of the arteries, senility. Mm-hmm. But now people are diagnosing it more easily, we call it Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. Mm-hmm. They're diagnosing it more easily. People are going to the doctor, raising concern about it more readily. And the population is living longer. So I think that's part of the reason that we're seeing it more frequently.
How closely do you follow research on ways to stave off or maybe someday prevent these types of dementia?
Yeah, so I follow it very closely. And unfortunately, right now, there's not a lot. I will tell you that Rush University a couple years ago did something called the MIND diet, which is a nutrition-based diet, combination of the Mediterranean DASH diet. And it decreased incidence of Alzheimer's by 60%, which is pretty incredible. And even people who followed the diet moderately had about a 40%. And then exercise is important.
Tell me the name of that diet again, because I'm pretty sure people are going to want to know.
It's called the MIND diet, M-I-N-D. And then exercise is important. There's good evidence that that can prevent it. I'll tell you, in my office, I have a treadmill desk. And I've not sat down in my office in 7 years. And the only reason why I do that is to try to prevent myself from getting Alzheimer's disease. So exercise is important. As far as the research with medications, it's been very, very depressing. A lot of the drug companies have lost billions of dollars, and most of the drugs, you know, just haven't worked. And it's questioned our understanding of the illness. And it currently improved medications, offer very little.
So the medications aren't doing it, but it seems like the person taking the initiative to do the exercise and, you know, I guess watch what they're eating and things like that, that is what's really going to make the difference. Do the mental exercises work? Like we're talking about crosswords, you see a lot of ads saying keep your mind sharp. And does that do anything?
Yeah. So a lot of people do that, but there's not a lot of data to really support that. And so if somebody likes to do it, we encourage it. But a lot of times if you have a memory problem, you know, it can be it can agitate you if somebody's, you know, asking you the same question over and over again because you get frustrated. You're trying to remember it and you can't. And that's the hard thing about Alzheimer's is it takes away who you are. It takes away your memories.
But you see yourself going too, so you're it's so frustrating.
Some of the dementias with Alzheimer's you do. With some of the others you really don't. As Dr. Gary said, they're just so different from one another. We are always quick to say to people that our wonderful respite program does nothing to cure or stave off the disease. What it does is give the patient and their caregiver a better quality of life and an engaged quality of life.
Yeah, I think that's very important, right?
Yeah, I mean, the caregiver is, you know, it's a full-time job for them and they get no days off and, you know, they have a 63% increased chance of dying. You know, they skip their mammograms, they skip their doctor visits, you know, because they can't live their loved one at a home. And so it really affects them, you know. And then they also, one of the things that it's probably more the depressing aspect of Alzheimer's is I watch people's friends slowly disappear. Mm-hmm. And so it leads to this loneliness and it affects, you know, the person who has it, but also the spouse.
That's why these programs are pretty important because, I mean, if the family can disappear or maybe they live far away or if friends kind of go away, at least there's that commonality of having a place to go where you can do your mind exercises and things like that and keep yourself alert. I wanted to ask Dr. Jacqueline Pfaffer, if you had a magic wand, what would you use it for the aging community in Collier?
I have to give you two answers.
Okay.
One is something I think everyone would agree to, which is to find a cure for this dreadful dementia tsunami that we're facing. And the second is I'd like to see our community, our funders, recognize and support the needs of seniors just as they do the needs of children. Children are our future, but it's the seniors who took care of us when we were children.
Yeah. Equally. And I want to talk a little bit about the event that you have coming up at the Naples Senior Center this Thursday. This is going to be February 8th in Naples. You're going to be joined by CBS News correspondent Barry Peterson. What is this about?
This is about his experience being a caregiver for his wife, Jan, who passed away from early Alzheimer's. And it's at Club Mediterra. It's a breakfast and a keynote address, and then Ron and I and Barry will be on a panel talking about dementia and caregiving, each from our own perspectives, and then Barry will sign books. But we think it's very important to get the word out to the community that there is a real need for support for the caregiver, who's often referred to as the invisible, unidentified patient. And this event is to really bring education to the community.
It'll be interesting hearing the perspective of the person that takes care of the person.
Yes. And there will be some prizes in what he has to say. Remember, he was young when his wife got the disease and he had to place her. So he will really give us a very interesting perspective on being a full-time international news correspondent, a full-time caregiver, and what it's like to be hit with this during your most productive years.
Who can attend this event? Is it open to the public?
It's open to the public. There is a charge. It's $50 for the breakfast and the program. And they can contact us at 325-4444 to get tickets. We still have some left.
All right. Well, that sounds really interesting, and I wish you luck with that event.
Thank you.
Thank you guys both for coming in and talking with us. That's about all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to thank Dr. Ron Gary. He's a board-certified gerontologist and the subsection chief of geriatrics at Naples Community Hospital. Dr. Gary, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
And also I want to thank Dr. Jacqueline Pfeffer. She's the president and CEO of the Naples Senior Center at Jewish Family and Community Services of Southwest Florida. Dr. Pfeffer, thanks also to you, and good luck with Thursday morning's forum.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll meet two of the folks behind FGCU's new entrepreneurship Living Learning Village. It's a way to instill an entrepreneurial spirit in students as they work their way through college. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.